Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
I'm happy to be here, excited to be here. Very excited. Let's have some fun.
As we do with all our guest episodes, we get the alternate intro from Steve, so very cool. We are joined by a guest, a very special guest. Finally glad to get him on after, what has it been, weeks, months of talking at this point of trying to get this together. But we do have Ace's assistant coach slash head of player development, Tyler Marsh, with us. Tyler, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I'm just jealous. I'll start there. You'd get a front row seat to the most dominant basketball team that I have. If it ain't the most dominant basketball team I've ever seen, it's definitely top two or top three. It is insane. Just before getting into any of the nitty gritty, because we got a lot to discuss and a lot of questions for you. How much fun are you having with this Aces team?
Man, it's the most fun I've ever had in my career. And you know, obviously what we're doing on the court is something to behold and something great to be part of. But to be honest with you, the best part is the people that you get to be around doing it. And so that makes all the difference with how you approach work. And if you're having fun coming in to the building each and every day, that can, change the course of everything. And so it's been great to be part of this staff. It's been great to be part of this team and this organization. And so I'm having a ton of fun.
I would imagine so. I'm having a blast watching, so I can only imagine. And Steve gets to hear all of my excitedness when we're hosting watch parties. And yeah, it's a good group. It's a fun group.
Definitely.
Before we dig into some Aces talk, I want to ask about you. First question I have for you. Mm-hmm. You have a blog. Your Twitter handle is Hoop for Thought. Mm-hmm. You had a blog called Hoop for Thought. Yep. What was the inspiration behind starting the blog?
You know, it was really just kind of like it started off as just like a kind of a personal outlet for me. I didn't really have any intentions with it. I like to write. I'm somewhat of soft spoken at times, but I kind of like to get my thoughts and my words out written down. And so it was something I just kind of did for peace and for pleasure. And so, that's kind of how it started. I wanted it to be a little bit intrinsic and not really so much of things that you can see on ESPN or SportsCenter or hear the everyday analysts talk about. And so that's kind of how it started.
Okay. Do you have any plans on bringing it back at any point? Or do you see it like evolving into something
else? I do. My wife is always pushing me to get back to it. She's a writer in herself, and she's a much more polished writer than myself. But I do have plans for it. I think the direction of it I want to change, less introspective, less like my opinions, and more kind of I want to focus on other coaches' kids. It's something that I take pride in, and so diving into that aspect of kind of blending in what that kind of lifestyle is like, whether it's growing up as the parent of a coach's kid or growing up as the coach's kid itself. So a little bit of a different direction, but that's going to be my focus moving forward.
I got you. Do you feel like there are any kind of misconceptions, I guess, that you want to address as far as like the coach's kid thing goes?
Yeah, I think that there's a sense of like, at times I'll use Steph Curry as kind of an example. Like there's everyone likes to use the term got it out the mud. And I think that that's kind of subjective on an individual, and who's to say that he didn't get it out the mud just because he had he had whatever resources that he had, and his dad was, who he was. But at the end of the day, you got to still put in the work. He wasn't a five-star recruit. He came out from a mid-major in Davidson and worked his way up from there. And, you know, it's, I think that coming under a coach's kid is similar in the sense of, there's things that are perceived to be given to you, but a lot of us want to create our own paths and don't want handouts. And a lot of it is part of my upbringing and how I was raised. And so, and I think when you look at my background and my career path, you can kind of see there is no handouts given along that route. So I take pride in that for sure.
I had a question off that because I can relate as far as creating your own path and embracing your own path. How did you balance finding your identity, finding your voice, while also honoring your dad and what he's done and kind of blending that together?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, it starts with the foundation of what my core values and beliefs are. I'm a man of faith. I'm super family oriented. And so just staying grounded, staying true to what those principles were growing up in the household, how myself and my sister were raised, and then kind of formulating that into my own coach's philosophy, so to speak, and just, you know, not trying to be anybody other than myself. And I think that's something that, you know, got me into coaching to begin with, is just being able to see the lives that my dad has been able to impact over the course of his career. I wanted to be part of that. And granted, his was at the college level, but again, that's part of my own story and part of my own career, is just kind of making that niche on the professional ranks. And so, again, I think that, you know, it's funny. I grew up going to Final Fours with him all the time. And every time we would see some of his colleagues or associates or whatever, and they would always be like, please don't go into this profession. Like, coaching is not what you want to do. And it's lo and behold, years later, I'm right in the thick of it. And so I've embraced it. There's a lot of things that come with it, a lot of responsibilities that come with it. And so it's not something I shy away from, something I embrace.
What made you go down that route? Was it something you had thought about? Was it something you felt like, hey, I can do this? Was it just a contribution as far as, I know what I can do to help success and build a team and contribute to a winning environment? What kind of piqued your interest there? Because that player to coaching pipeline kind of, I feel like, goes up and down. And you kind of see it switch more now, where you're seeing more people who played from different backgrounds entering the coaching field with the higher speed. What was your thought process there?
My first thought was that I wasn't very good. I wasn't good enough to play.
Hey, he's speaking to me. I was a
decent Division III college player, but I knew quickly that I think, you know, that's is one of the things about being a coach's kid, is you have a good perspective on, you know, on those kind of things. And so I knew I wasn't a professional basketball player at the end of the day. And so what my career would lead to or entail after that, I wasn't exactly sure. I really thought I was going to be in the front office of an NBA team. NBA has kind of been my focus since I was young. And, you know, as you're young, everybody thinks that they're going to play in the NBA. And then the older you get, it just kind of moves into other aspects. And so for me, I always loved the idea of building a team, what it takes to build a team, kind of the, you know, everything that goes into it. And so front office was an area that I wanted to kind of explore. I majored in business. And so it was just kind of one step in preparing me for that, you know, in that realm. I planned to get my master's in sports management at the time. And so that was kind of what my focus was. But upon graduating college, I'd applied to a ton of different internships with NBA teams, both on the coaching side and on the front office side, and hadn't really heard back much. And so I moved back to Miami, Florida. I worked in the ticket office at University of Miami and just kind of figured things out. Hopefully I could kind of generate some more connections. And I knew that I had a bunch of connections on the college side just from you know, from my dad and who he's connected and associated with. But again, I wanted to kind of do that on my own and find my way on my own. And so I ended up being a grad assistant at Texas Southern for about a month and a half. And we got invited to a Houston Rockets workout. Texas Southern is about 5 minutes from the Rockets facility. So went over to the Rockets facility. I had applied for an internship earlier that summer there. I asked about it. They said that they have filled it, but they may have something with their G League team available. And so they introduced me to, ironically, the head coach at the time, which is Nick Nurse, introduced me to Nick. And he asked me a few questions, asked me why I was interested, invited me to help work some guys out. Kevin Martin was with the Rockets at the time, and helped work him out one day and got invited back the rest of the week. And by the end of the week, Coach Nurse had offered me a player development spot on his G League team down in Rio Grande Valley. And that was my first way of getting in the door in the professional basketball ranks. And so from getting in on the coaching side, I just kind of ran with it. It was something I almost fell into. And once I was there, I saw how much that I felt like I would miss being hands-on with players if I pursued that front office route. And it still kind of piques my interest, but I've just kind of been riding the wave since. And as I move forward, it's just about, for me, it's about being purposeful, about being impactful. And so that's kind of how I've been running, what I've been running with.
That's awesome.
Now, before Nikias asks this question, just for my peace of mind, mm-hmm. you never sent an email to the Memphis Grizzlies between the years 2011 and 2014, right?
Actually, yes. That's crazy that you asked that. I did, actually.
It wasn't to me, was it?
I'm not exactly sure who it was with. I know at the time they were the Iowa Energy during the 13-14 season, became the Iowa Wolves. But there was a period there where before the Memphis Hustle came, that the Iowa was affiliated, I believe, with Memphis. But I do remember inquiring at some point with Memphis. So didn't work out, but it is what it is.
Oh, you know, it wasn't me.
The world is indeed small. I just had a very quick one on the front office portion because I didn't know that. I had like a general, hey, what coaching influences did you have? Was there anyone, any particular front office that kind of piqued your interest there? Or is it just like general team building that kind of grabbed your attention?
Yeah, I think it's more general team building. And I think in a funny way, it kind of stemmed from my youth and just being I'm kind of a little bit of a video gamer. And
there it is.
And so there'll be times where I play or I start season after season after season. I won't play a game. I'll just build teams and kind of start from the bottom and work his way up. And so that's how I started back in my youth. And then, you know, I think that I love the idea that there's no one really one way to go about, you know, building those types of teams, just like there's no really one way to go about coaching. But I always felt like I would be pretty good at putting people in positions that I felt like would be where they could be successful and ultimately kind of make up for the areas that I lacked, rather. You know what I mean? So that's kind of what piqued my interest on the front office side.
I now have like a shred of connectivity to this conversation. You know, I don't have the coaching experience that you two guys have, but the video game, the roster team building, and that kind of influencing how you look at stuff. We'll hit something. Very random, then we'll get to like the serious parts. Do you have like a random trade or something or any particular move in your team building from video games that you remember? Cause like,
I don't know about a random trade. I know there was one year of 2K where like I was unstoppable with OJ Mayo. And so it didn't matter what team I had, I was going to trade for OJ Mayo just for whatever reason. I was just fire with him. And so whoever was let go for him to come to my team in that year, then that would have been the trade.
We got some OJ Mayo love on the podcast. I always remember, I haven't played NBA Live 07 in I don't know how long at this point. The trade system was just so broken on NBA Live, period. I still remember it. Antoine Walker, James Posey on a first would get you Mellow, and it's just the dumbest thing I've ever ever seen.
It's funny. None of my friends that played growing up, like none of them like playing against me because I always, not that I would win, but like I play too realistic. Like I'm not, no matter what game it is, if it's Madden, I'm not going to go for it on fourth and 20 just because I got Michael Vick and I can run past everybody. Like I'm not like, and so 2K, I'm out there, I'm trying to run plays. I'm trying to play the way that team that I'm playing with actually plays in real life. And so, I probably take it out of control, but.
We found something here. This is.
No, I'm with it. Hey, there are certain teams. If you are a half court team, we are walking the ball up. Yeah, I'm going for realism. I'm not about to push it all the time. No.
For sure.
There we go. Tyler Marsh, hashtag Sim Nation. We did it. as you worked your way through, I guess, the D/G League at that point, you mentioned Nick Nurse. Who are some of the other coaches that you worked with? What were some of their influences on the way that you view basketball?
I think Coach Nurse would have the it would start with him, and it just his, you know, there's actually a lot of similarities. I don't want to jump the gun, but a lot of similarities between him and Becky in terms of neither one of them are afraid to be unconventional. And that was probably the first thing that I learned in working for him, that if there's something that you believe in, that you want to try, you don't have to always do things the way that they've always been done. Mm-hmm. And so it was, and that's for me, or for him rather, started, I think, in the G League and over his overseas coaching background as well. Just working his way up it through the minor leagues is now something that I could relate to as well. Even though I've yet to be a head coach, he kind of laid the blueprint for me in that respect. Whether it was with RGV that year or 6 years later with Toronto, he was still doing the same thing, and we're going boxing one and triangle and two, things that not necessarily had never been done, but not to that extreme, not to that extent. That we were doing them in 18, 19. And so it was start with him. Following that year, I worked for Nate Bjorkgren in Iowa, who later would become the head coach with Indiana my first year there. And from him, I learned about preparation. So I worked for him for 2 years in Iowa and Bakersfield. And then my last year in the G League, 16-17 season in Fort Wayne, was under Steve Ganzi, who was the head coach of College Park G League team this past year. And so a few different stops, but I've learned something from each one of those guys.
How did you blend what maybe you had thought coming in with what you had learned from these other coaches, with also what you had seen?
Yeah.
Because that's part of the process I think people don't understand. We're like, I have an idea of what I think we could be.
Yep.
I see what we are.
Yep.
How do I blend these together? Because it's always easy to be like, no, I got this. I'm ready.
Sure.
Then they hand you the practice plan. They hand you the clipboard. It's like, go ahead. And it's like, oh, like my thing was like, I didn't know about the ending of plays. Mm-hmm. I had never thought about it. Mm-hmm. I'd have an idea, be like, hey, let's run this. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what do you do after? Mm-hmm. What happens if it's denied? And I'm like, oh. Mm-hmm. I'll be right back.
Sure. Sure. Man, you're speaking to like G League or now or?
Any. G League, now, and just over the course of it. Because it's, I believe the fun part of this and your run, your story, is not just the amount of stops, the amount of work that you put in, the opportunity that have been in front of you.
Yeah.
And what you've taken with those. It's like for me, you don't, it's not easy to go from one to two to three.
Sure.
It's a grind. And so I'm interested in learning what you took from that as far as, you know, the growth there.
Yeah, I think that first going to the G League, just going to the G League from college, it was a little bit of a culture shock. And from the sense of college was what I always knew, just being around my dad and his teams and whatnot. And there you kind of, you know what you have on a consistent basis, and you get to the G League and it's an ever-changing roster. You don't know who you're going to have night to night. We had the MVP that year in Andrew Gawlak, and he gets called up to the Lakers in game one of our playoff series right off the court during warmups. And it's and so from that year, my years in the G League, is just that you have to be overprepared. It's just again, from a night to night basis, you put together a game plan and what you think you may have. And then all of a sudden the game comes around 30 minutes before tip comes around. And now everything that you thought you were going to do, you got to switch up on the fly. And so that would probably be the biggest lesson that I learned. The other thing is that there's similarities between the G League and the WNBA. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but I mean in a way of just like the staffs are so much smaller that it's a little bit more hands on deck. And so the idea of not being above doing the little things is something that I think can carry on too. You know, when I was in the G League, I was doing everything from laundry to player workouts to scouting reports to transporting new players to and from hotels or airports. And it's a little bit of, it's a grind. And so that would be my biggest takeaway from the G League. From my year in college coaching, I think you start to have you have more of an appreciation for the individual coaching college kids. They come from different backgrounds, but they're still learning who they are. They're still learning how to be a man, and you have the responsibility of teaching them such. I think it helps you connect and relate a little bit more to the youth. And for me, something that is, I guess, unique in my career is that I've been on teams where I've been a part of staffs where I'm the youngest on the staff. There's players that are older than me. I'm older than some players. It's just a level of connectivity that you got to bridge the gap amongst. That was something I took from that year as well. And then it's been a plethora of things that I've been able to take across my career thus far, for sure.
I had a general question. Just with the work that you've done as a coach with player development, I think it takes naturally like an ability to connect with people more so than anything. Is that something that you had to grow into, being able to be hands-on with people and being able to talk to people? And I ask that as someone that is very like soft-spoken, I'm cool, just kind of being in my own corner, et cetera. Like, were you naturally always someone that just wanted to help people, and that kind of showcase, I mean, it kind of showed its way through with your basketball work in general, or did you have to kind of bridge that gap?
A little bit of both. The mindset of that was always there. That's just who I am. I'm a people pleaser. I'm a helper. I'm a listener. I remember when my first interview with Coach Hammond, and she asked me what I felt my biggest strength was. And I told her that I think I have a gift for discernment. I think I understand and read people well. I have empathy for people and their situations. And so I do think that part has always been a part of me. Now, finding my voice within that and being a little bit, you know, reserved in that sense, I think that's the part that that has grown the most. And I think just with that comes more understanding of who I am as a coach. And when you become more comfortable with that, it allows you to be a little bit more comfortable in different settings and different environments. And I think that is also kind of speaks to what my background has been, just moving all over the place growing up with my dad coaching. And so you have to adjust and adapt quickly. I said it's a lot. I went to from fifth grade to 11th grade. I went to a different school every year. And so I've been in a number of different situations where I've had to be able to relate to different people. I've gone to all white schools, I've gone to all black schools, all white churches, black churches, lived in white neighborhoods, black neighborhoods. So it's it adds to the kind of the totality and well-roundedness of, I guess, my coaching profile, so to speak. And so that's something that I try to take bits and pieces of every stop that I've been at and every situation I've been at and every coach that I've worked for and take bits and pieces there to kind of mold into my own.
Got you. Steve, did you have anything before we transition to ACES?
Is there anything that where your coaching philosophy may have shifted? Or, I mean, honestly, as a coach, you're always evolving. But is there anything where you're like, okay, this is something I thought we need to do this defensively, or now actually this is probably best for us?
No, I think actually the biggest shift started in the G League. And I think that is something that most coaches would probably allude to. And that's just the open-mindedness of positionless basketball. I think that my era, probably I graduated in 2010, and I think my era is probably the last bit of like point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, center. And so once you see the versatility that the game is now, it opens up the possibilities of doing so much more on both ends of the floor, offensively and defensively. And so you know, for us, after just speaking on the ACES, it's like after Asia Wilson, our point guard, Chelsea Gray, is probably our best post-up player, you know? So it's just those types of things have changed and allows you to kind of branch out and do some things that's a little more unconventional for what basketball has been known for the last, you know, several years.
Got you. Well, let's get to these ACES, who, as of recording, are 24-2. They are first in offensive rating, defensive rating, 2-point percentage, 3-point percentage, effective field goal percentage, true shooting percentage. They have the lowest turnover rate in the league. They are second in pace, and they are now, well, as of now, they're the first team to lead the league in defense and be a top two pace team since the 2019 Aces 5 years ago. So historic doesn't begin to describe what this team has been so far. I guess on a more general note, what has the integration process been like for you with this Aces group? This is year two for you.
This year or coming over?
Coming over and then branching into this year.
Yeah, it's been a great transition. I think that something that adds that helps all that is that myself, Becky, one of our other assistants, Natalie Nakase, we all are making that transition from the NBA at the same time, and so we kind of understood what each was going through. Granted, Becky had her background in the WNBA as a player, but it's a little bit different now, and from being from the coach's side is a little bit different. And so I think for me in my role in player development, it was more learning individual players' tendencies and whatnot, not just with our team, but around the league, just to kind of get a more of an understanding of what it is players like to do, what it is that's working around the league, and how I can help kind of shift and mold that into what we do here. And then just going from year one to year two, I think everybody has kind of made that jump of just being more familiar and comfortable with the system and with each other. And so I think that is kind of a culmination of what you're seeing on the court, is just that cohesiveness that's there. And even though our core is returning, they're returning in the sense that not just they're being more comfortable with each other, but now they're more comfortable with what we do as a system. So they're help bridge the gap for people like Alicia Clark and Candace Parker, who, as good as they are on and off the court, there's still a level of cohesiveness that has to be met on their end too. And so they've been great vets since they've been here, great pros. And so, but our core has done a great job of making sure that they're integrated as best as possible too. So it's been a welcoming transition for myself and for my family, and we love it here.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. How, I guess, to the cohesion point, have you felt that more on the offensive end or the defensive end?
This year, I would say it's hard to say because our offense is really clicking right now. But I think that the defensive jumps that we have made from last year, I think, is something that may not just pop off the screen like our offense does. And I think that changed because our offense kind of is what it is, regardless of who the opponent is. The defense, yeah, we still have some foundational principles, but your defensive game plan is going to tweak based upon personnel and who you're going against. And so that may be a little different to disguise or to recognize game to game. But I think that the buy-in defensively has been kind of what sets apart this year's team from last year's team. And just knowing that we have extremely skilled individual players on the offensive end, but it takes a unit defensively to kind of carry us to where we want to be. And so, and then also the understanding that we're not the only team that's advancing from an offensive standpoint. Like, if you don't come to play defense, New York is going to run you out the building. If you don't come to play defense, Jewel Lloyd is going to shoot you out the building. If you don't come to play defense, Alyssa Thomas is going to run it down your throat. So it's like, this is a tough league to win in. It's consistently and we understand that. And so I think that in our league specifically with 12 teams, the records aren't always going to reflect how good a team is. So there's a lot of firepower around the league that we're aware of. And so we understand that we got to be on our A game defensively to really make our name.
You hit on something league wide, and now I'll zoom it back in. Has there been a shift from year one to year two for you in the W that you feel like league-wide teams are doing something differently or teams are emphasizing this a little bit more?
Yeah, I think the spacing is a lot more offensively. It's a lot more noticeable. Teams are spreading the floor a lot more. They're trying to play at a pace that's different from what most teams have been used to. It feels like every team plays fast almost now. And it's and so that's been fun to watch. I think it makes for a better product overall. Just it makes for a more enjoyable thing to watch. And not just as a fan, but I think as a player, it's a more fun system to play in but it also unleashes certain talents. And it showcases players being able to showcase their skills and abilities in a way that maybe keeping them condensed and in a box wouldn't. And so it's for me, it's extremely fun to watch when you watch a team like Dallas, who on paper and on surface, like, you wouldn't think they play as fast as they do with Natasha Howard and Savali and McCowan and Arike and Dangerfield. Like, it's a huge team. And so you're normally teams with that kind of makeup, you think you're just going to kind of walk it up, play through the post and kind of, but they play at a pace that's tough to deal with. And so I think you're still being able to see certain team identities show in themselves, but I think across the league, the pace is being emphasized on that offensive end specifically.
Gotcha. I guess with the Aces, if you're talking about the foundation, I think you kind of have to start with Asia, with you being around her for the last couple of years. What do you think has been the biggest area of growth from her from last year to this year?
She accepts a lot of responsibility, but she doesn't put as much, it doesn't weigh on her as much. She's playing a little more freer. I think that last year that not just with the transition, but I think that she felt like the year before and maybe even the year before that was a failure team-wise. Like I think that she knew that they had a championship caliber team and they fell short of what the ultimate goal was. And so winning the championship last year and obviously the MVP and defense player of the year was icing on the cake. But like there's still a mindset of being greedy and wanting to continue to rack up those individual accolades, but winning has taken precedence and she's been a willing teammate in terms of what she sacrifices on a nightly basis to make sure her teammates succeed and then ultimately the team succeeds. So she's extremely unselfish. And, you know, I think that sometimes she may get the short end of the stick because you hear kind of the super team narrative run wild and it kind of almost in a way diminishes the impact and the value that she has had on this team. Because as you said, she's the anchor of what we do on both ends. And I think that, you know, Chelsea might be the captain of the ship in terms of making sure that we're settled and in our right spots, but Asia holds us down on both ends. And this thing, it doesn't work without her. She's our face. She's our best player. And, you know, it doesn't get moving without her for sure.
I guess I'll go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was just going to ask real quick. What are we missing out on with the versatility that she brings night in, night out? Because if you turn on Aces game and you watch the Aces play defense, watch Asia Wilson's rotation.
Mm-hmm.
There's at least three or four a night where someone has switched. Asia's on the weak side. I got you. Get out. Mm-hmm. Those little things add up.
Mm-hmm.
How do we help, or what can we say, or what are we missing as far as being able to attach that kind of versatility to a quote unquote big?
Well, I think her versatility is certainly noticeable defensively, but I think that the growth that she has made offensively, being able to stretch the floor. And when people say stretch the floor, it doesn't always necessarily mean shooting threes. She's got the ability to do that, but it's the ability to play in space. And the change that she has made from maybe 2, 3, 4 years ago to really her game being strictly in the blocks, elbows, nail kind of area to now all over the court, there's really no place on the floor that you can really just kind of own in on her. Like she will kill you from mid range. She's quicker than most fives that guard her. She's taller than most fours that guard her. And she keeps you honest. You can bring the double if you want to, but you'll have Jackie and you'll have Plum and you'll have Chelsea who are all shooting down near 40% from three. And so she commands so much attention on both ends that, you know, she does so much for us. She opens up the game so much for us and what she's able to do. And I think she's one that kind of is willing to take a back seat when she has other people going. She can make her mark on a game as a screener and allow our guards to get downhill. She's willing to make the extra pass when the defense collapses in the paint. And so all that kind of stuff that doesn't necessarily always show up on a box score, she's willing to do so.
I'm glad you brought up the passing, because I think that's probably the thing that's gone most under the radar, in my opinion, with her, because it's not going to show up with her every like 6 assists or something like that. Mm-hmm. But she just processes the floor so much more quickly than she did even last year. Mm-hmm. And even that little bit of a margin, when you consider, you know, the broader problem that the Aces give you with how much they're able to space the floor, you mm-hmm. already can't hone in the way that you want to. If you mm-hmm. bring help to her and she's getting the ball out as quickly as she is, you're pretty much done. It's an open shot. It's a drive. It's a cut. And if the Aces have you in rotation, it's just trouble for for whoever's trying to defend.
Yeah, we put a lot of emphasis on just playing the right way. And for us, that's, we call those rim reads, and those are that's kind of a huge staple for us. And so, coach always preaches that it's not always about the result. If you draw two defenders, you make the kick out, and the shot is missed, We'll live with that. We want to make the right basketball play when it's there. And so her willingness to do so, being the two-time MVP that she is, and you know, sometimes she may be capable to score over a double team, but she's showing the willingness to make that extra pass, and that becomes contagious for the rest of the team.
This may be, I hope this isn't a bad question, but when it comes to like those rim reads or just passing reads in general against rotating defenses, how are you able to drill that consistently?
We do it, actually. We do it pretty consistently. Try to incorporate it within our workouts. It's just about creating game-like scenarios, you know, that makes it easier to translate. And so sometimes, and it makes it easier to kind of explain a drill. And, you know, I think that once they're able to kind of see it on film and then go out and reenact it onto the court, it makes it, you know, the conversion a little bit easier for them. And so, but it's certainly something that's doable. It's something that, that we do almost daily when we have practice. And so, yeah, we just try to create those moments for them.
All right, got you. I think someone that has made yet another leap offensively has been Jackie Young. And she has been pretty vocal, or I guess as vocal as Jackie Young can be. She has been very vocal about the work that she has put in with you in particular. Like, what has it been like building that relationship off the floor? And what do you get to see that we just don't, since we're not behind the curtain?
Man, it's been amazing. It's been, Jackie was like the first person that I really worked with when I was here. She had just come back from Australia, and but her stretching the floor was something that that Becky knew that she had to be great at for us to really be the team that we wanted to be. And I think for Jackie, it was a matter of confidence, but there was also some mechanical things that she knew she wanted to fix. She knew how efficient she was as a paint finisher, and how she can, with the body that she has, to be able to finish through contact. She's quick, she's fast, she's strong. So she knew that her ability to get downhill and to get by people was going to be there. She knew the defensive prowess is going to be there. And so for her last year, it was a huge emphasis on being able to fix whatever needed to be fixed mechanically with her shot, so that she felt more comfortable shooting at three. And so our process honestly just started like right around the arc, right around the restricted area. And I guess for the first maybe 2 or 3 days, I don't know that we left the paint or the lane lines. It was a lot of form shooting. We started with their feet, making sure that was aligned. We worked our way up. And you know, I guess the picture circulates now of how her shot was on one side of her body and now to the other side. So we really worked on that kind of rhythm and things that would kind of become muscle memory of keeping it on the right side of her body. And that ultimately led to a more fluid motion. But again, you can have the greatest plan in the world. You got to have a player who's willing to put in the work, who sees and understands and trusts the vision, and is able to kind of make it part of their game. And so it's been a testament to her, and then also a testament to Becky being able to put her in positions to feel that comfortability. And you know, now she's drawing plays up and the games for Jackie to shoot threes. And so I think you're seeing that confidence grow on the daily. She's shooting it great. And I think the funny thing about it is she doesn't want to hear that she's shooting it great. She's like, don't let me think about it. Just let me keep shooting. So No, but this, she's been great to work with for sure.
Oh, just because it's been hinted slash posted about on Instagram throughout the year. What are those one-on-one games like?
For who? For me or her?
Yes.
Two different, you're going to get two different answers. It's probably a lot more fun for her than it is for me taking those hits daily. But they've been great. I think the fun thing about those in the off season is that you get to see a different side of her personality. And that side will come out in games every now and then. You get her riled up a little bit. She'll show some emotion, but you see that more regularly in the off season. And I'll try to talk some trash to her just to kind of get her, get her warmed up. But one of the amazing things about pros, and I've learned this in the G League and the NBA and now in the WNBA, is like those who are elite, the switch that they have to just, if they don't want you to score or if they want to score, they can flip that switch. And it's amazing. I was with, I was shooting with Plum the other day, and she came out, she hadn't shot a three yet. And I was like, all right, we got to go 10 to 12. He was like, that's it? And I was like, all right, yeah, 10 to 12, like right now. And she just rouses them off. The first two spots, she didn't miss one. And it's just like, but also she's got something, and she's just wired so differently that if she were to miss the first two and now she got to make 10 straight, she's going to lock in and she's going to make 10 straight. And not everyone can do that. And but it's been great. I know I branched off a little bit from the one-on-one games, but that's kind of who we have, who we're dealing with. One-on-one games with Jack, with Plum, with Asia, you're going to get their best game every day.
Before, I had a very quick question. Steve, did you have anything before us?
No, keep going.
Okay. Because I guess it's mostly Jackie related, but it's also just a general skill development question. Because something that I've thought about just on the basketball level in general, especially for young wings, is how they make the leap as foul drawers, how they can get themselves easy points. Mm-hmm. And I think about, like, on the NBA side, something that Steve and I have talked about is like LaMelo, as someone that is still growing as a downhill driver, but someone that's trying to figure out how to draw fouls. Mm-hmm. How are you able to drill that out? And if so, like, how can you go about doing that? And I ask that within the context of Jackie, because Coach Hammond has been as vocal as she can be, towing that line well, about, Jackie gets downhill a ton. She draws contact, does it well, doesn't get called for a bunch of charges, though, but doesn't get to the line as much.
Yep. Yes, I think that with Jackie, it's more so body control and understanding how to finish through the contact more so, because you don't necessarily, at least in my opinion, you don't necessarily want to practice on how to get fouled, because then I think you start driving with the intention to get fouled as opposed to with the intention of finishing. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's picking our spots of when to bring different timing of contact to her finishes when we do finishing drills. Mm-hmm. And so contact comes from different sides of her body. Maybe some contact not coming at all, generating contact on the drive. So now that when she's creating her angle to the basket, now she's in a position where the defense has to foul her. And then also playing quickly off the catch, I think, puts defenses in a position to now she's a step by you in front of you. You're probably not going to block her shot if you're another guard. If you're just a big standing at the rim, maybe. But if you're a guard trying to get back into position, you're probably going to have to reach across her body to contest. And so being able to find different ways to finish and absorb contact is definitely something that we work on.
I guess go ahead, Steve.
Well, I was going to branch off talking about finishing. I was just going to do a quick Euro step. How important is Kelsey Plum's finishing?
Man, it's that's been a huge growth for her, and not just her ability to finish, but I think that her ability to make those reads in the paint. I think the Plum of 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, you would kind of take your chance. As long as she's not beating you from three, you would probably take your chances with what she will give you in the paint, whether that's trying to finish over a big or maybe staying home so she's not able to kick out to shooters. But now she's doing a little bit of everything. She's picking her spot. She's knowing how to create angles inside. She's finishing over length. And on top of that, she's just so fast getting downhill. And so it's, whenever it's a foot race, you like your chances with Plum going downhill. But again, I think it's her, her willingness as a passer and a facilitator that's opened up the lane for her as a finisher.
I got you. Like, just a quick stat check, nearly 27% of Kelsey Plum shots coming at the rim this year. That's up from around 25% last year, about 22.5% the year before that. So like that is steadily becoming a more active part of her game. I'm glad you mentioned the playmaking for her. And something that she's talked about before is like the uptick in hedges and traps that she's getting this year. Mm-hmm. And her, you know, just branch off what you said, her ability to get off the ball quickly. And I guess finding that balance between getting off of it quickly versus let me drive past this and put further mm-hmm. strain on the defense. I feel like that's been pretty darn good for her this mm-hmm. year. I guess going back to Jackie, since she's also seeing a mixture of coverages this year.
Yep.
I think we saw a lot of switches and unders early in her career. That's becoming less ideal for defenses with her growing as a pull-up shooter.
Yep.
What do you think the next frontier for Jackie is going to be offensively?
I think it's continuing to grow continuing to make reads as a ball handler. I think that, it opens up our offense a ton when we can move Chelsea and Kelsey off the ball at times. It gives us a little bit more versatility to not have to put all the pressure on Chelsea when she's in there. Like when she's out, we want to still be comfortable with who we have in there as ball handlers and being able to take pressure off of Plum at times that when she's in at the point. And Jackie can do all that, has the ability to do all that. So I think it's still keeping an aggressive mindset when she's on the ball, but still having the understanding of being able to make those reads when you draw multiple defenders as well. So again, I think that's something that she's going to have to continue to own in on and to watch film on, because you're right. She's been played one way so long. Every team's going under. You want to protect against the drive, and now she can make you pay from deep. And so now you got to think twice about how you guard her. And so as time goes on, I think she'll definitely grow in that area for sure.
As for the other, I guess, all-star guard for the Aces, you mentioned Chelsea Gray briefly earlier about the post game, but the passing has been so ridiculous from Chelsea Gray this year. Just a quick one. Do you have a favorite Chelsea Gray pass from this season?
Yeah, it may not be the one of the more sexier ones that gets talked about, but there is a there was a pass that she made to Asia the last time we were in Minnesota, and me and Chelsea talk all the time about I try to put myself in Chelsea's mind when she's out there. So it just helps me kind of relate to her and kind of, talk to her, tell her what I'm seeing, make sure it's the same thing she's seeing. And there's one time she was coming down, was in transition, and she was letting things develop. And I saw Asia cut into the rim and I was like, all right, she's going to hit her. And she didn't hit her when I thought. And in my mind, I was like, damn, she missed her. But she waited a half a second and she still got it to her. And I was like, there's no way that she's still like, I saw the gap closing. And I was like, there's no way she can make that. And she made it. And I told her, I was like, at the next time out, I was like, yo, you're unbelievable. Like, you're just unbelievable. And so that would probably be my favorite of this season. But everything that she does in games, she does in practices too. So for us, we kind of, it's nothing new to us because we see it all the time. But at the same time, we don't take any of that for granted too. So, and I think that when you have someone who has that type of ability as a passer, it makes your teammates want to cut hard. It makes your bigs want to screen because you know you're going to have a chance to get the ball. And it keeps you connected because if you take your eyes off of it, it might hit you in the head. And so, she's one of the top passers in any league. Across the world. She's unbelievable.
And before Nakias continues, I just want to mention, y'all putting Chelsea Gray at the elbow and running action off that is patently unfair. And why? Man, I caught that and I was like, wait a minute. You need to tell me now Asia is going to set a split and you got Chelsea Gray at the elbow, et cetera, et cetera.
So yeah, it's it's something we did a lot early with Candace because she's such a great passer as well. And so obviously not having her for the last several games, Chelsea's kind of, we found that spot for Chelsea too. And so, yeah, when you have great cutters like we do off the ball and have a passer like Chelsea, it's it can open up a lot of things for you.
Steve will say unfair. I'll just say fun because I just get a kick out of it. I also like, I have like a weird time watching Chelsea sometimes or just elite passers in general because like I gravitate towards elite passers naturally. Mm-hmm. And so I always have fun watching like Chelsea with the no looks, or I guess less sexy is Chelsea bringing the ball up and it's some kind of like stagger into the post or a cross screen into the post. Mm-hmm. And Chelsea is flinging the ball so freaking early.
Yeah.
And then Asia gets a deep catch. Or Jackie gets a deep catch.
Yeah.
I have so much fun watching that. And then I'll watch other games. And it's just like, wait a minute. This player is open when this defender peeled in. Why didn't you make that pass? And it's like, oh, no, right. Chelsea's like a 99th percentile passer. Not everyone can do that. Do you ever find yourself like watching film or watching scouts of other teams just like, oh, we might need to watch out for that. Oh, wait, never mind. They can't make that pass to Chelsea. So maybe we kind of...
Not necessarily. I know there's sometimes when I'll mess with Chelsea and I'll be like it could be a simple pass and she'll put flair to it just to put flair to it. And I'll be like you really didn't have to do all that, but we'll take it. But so it's she's second to none in that respect. And there's so much trust there that exists between her and Becky. And so she does so many things right that you kind of let things, a couple of things go, and then when they don't go right. And so she's somebody that you just kind of, you got to let be her. She's the orchestrator out there. She's an extension of Becky out there. There'll be times during games where she'll come to the sideline and coach will be like, you want it? She'll be like, yep. She'll take the clipboard. She'll sit in Becky's spot and she's the one talking the whole time out. And so that speaks to her character, that speaks to her as a player, and that speaks to the respect that she has in the locker room for sure.
You. As someone that's naturally inside the building, I know you still are able to catch some of the noise, good or bad, with how the Aces talked about. How have you felt about Aces coverage this year and how the team is talked about? You mentioned like the super team and from me being in Zooms or being in person, just about everyone that's asked about super team stuff immediately shuts it down. It's like, no, we're just trying to be the best version of ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So how have you felt about just the super team talk and just Aces coverage at large this year?
I think we do a really good job of drowning that noise out. And I'm not sure that had we not won the championship last year, I'm not sure how that would have impacted how we feel about the noise coming into this year. I think that the ups and downs that we went through last year helped shape and mold us into who we are now. And so we understand that, everything's not always going to be, peaches and roses for us. So as long as we're maintaining who we are, that we're doing things the way that we believe in, and that we're staying true to our core values and what we believe as an organization, as a team, then we go out to the court every night and it's Aces versus everybody else for us. And so that's kind of the mindset that we go into. Every single day from day one of last year, coach's first message to the team was respect the game, respect each other, respect the opponents. And so we don't take anything for granted. We know how good this league is, and we try to give every single game its proper attention and respect. And so we let the noise be what it is. We hear it. We just don't let it kind of, affect who we are and what we do.
Got you. Steve, do you have any closing questions on the Aces?
How many little things does Alicia Clark do?
Man.
Yes.
it's something that really can't even be put into words. And it's something that I hope this doesn't disrespect either side, but like I liken her to the first time that I ever saw PJ Tucker up close. And what I mean by that is like every single possession she's talking, she's directing, she's communicating, and there's no substitute for that. There's no replacement for that. She's a seasoned championship pro, and she brings that. She brought that since day one. But and when you communicate in that way, no matter what the score is, no matter what the situation is, that becomes contagious. And I think communication is an area that we're continuing to try to grow at as a team. And she certainly is at the forefront of that. But she, man, she's a consummate pro. She's a great teammate. She works hard. I'll kind of give you the sheet before every game. She asks for her own set of like specific edit film edits for whoever we're about to play. I remember the first time she sent me a request for it and I was like, you want all this just for you? She's like, yep. I need it. She gets stats. She gets film and that's who she is. And that's what she's brought to us.
Alicia Clark, you are an honorary dunker. You've done it.
That does not surprise me at all. It's been great to watch her play all year. That is phenomenal.
Yep.
Also an elite shooter. Also very underrated post player. Has unlocked a ton of
offensively and defense. She brings versatility. I think that, you know, an area of concern. We lost De'Erica. How much versatility De'Erica brought us specifically on the defensive end, and so. Being able to lock in on Alicia and her being able to maintain that versatility that we can we feel comfortable put her 1 through 4 at times 1 through 5 and so she's certainly been something that's irreplaceable for us.
I did have one more Aces thing before we transition to some fun to close out the pot. Kia Stokes' defense this year has been insane, and like the rim protection has been consistent. The defensive rebounding is important as it is the end possessions. Like that's been good. The switching has hit so much harder this year. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you came into camp like, hey, let's make sure we can get this right? Or is this some kind of switch that's been flipped for her?
No, I think that's something that we were able to see in spurts last year. And I think that's something that we just wanted to make sure that was consistent for us. And Kia makes us versatile in her own right, too, with Asia's athleticism, her versatility. Like Kia can take some pressure off of her guarding, some of the bigger bigs in our league, or if she needs to, she can use her length to kind of keep those more versatile fours in front of her too. But she presents such a presence in pick and roll. And if there's a stat for block threes, she's got to lead the league in block three. Like her being able to close out and to contest the three, is something that she's great at. And so she's been a huge plus for us this year, and continuing, the defensive presence that she brought last year, but she's been a huge piece to what we do.
She's been so fun. Like Steve and I have talked about on the pod. I was like, man, if Kia was averaging like 25, 26 minutes a game, like she just makes an all defense team.
Yep. No doubt.
What she's been able to do this year, like on a per possession basis, she just does so many little things.
Yep.
And then you get the loud stuff like I was just cackling in my screen watching the Atlanta game. And it's just like, here's a switch on to Alicia Gray. Here's a switch on to Ryan Howard. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Akia's doing this. What do you do against this team? Anyway, we'll transition into a different topic to close things out. We got SummerSlam coming up this weekend. I know you are a big wrestling fan. I'll start first. What got you into wrestling? What was kind of your introduction there?
I started watching wrestling probably when I would say 5. It was mostly at the time it was coming on mostly on Saturdays and Sundays. So I was sitting in front of the TV and my mom saw I had a huge interest in it. So she would remind me when it's on. And, Bret Hart was the first wrestler that kind of captivated me. And so that's been my favorite wrestler of all time. In the office.
How about that?
Yeah.
That's how.
I'm a huge, huge, huge Bret Hart fan. huge wrestling fan. I stay locked in no matter what it is, AEW, WWE, NXT. I'm locked in. So it's been just a passion of mine my whole life.
Okay. So basically you are glad that the W preseason game was in Toronto and not Montreal, is what I mean.
Yeah, man. See, that brings up a touchy subject, but it's just been, some people have Marvel superheroes as their, you know, kind of as who their superheroes are. Like for me, it's from growing up from a, as a young kid, it's been wrestlers. It's been like the larger than life type figures and actors. And so like, I think when you're young, you think that it's, you know, you think it's 100% real. And then the older you get more of appreciation for the production of it and everything that goes into making the product what it is.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned the last part because Steve laughs at me all the time when I mentioned, like, obviously you're a kid, you think it's real. Then you realize, okay, no, it's not, but this is still fun. Mm-hmm. And then there was the great Kali Rey Mysterio thing where I was just like, hey, hold on. Did someone break character? Is this part of the script? What is happening here?
Right. For sure. No, but I think that, you know, you watch a little for the little particulars. You watch how things go into character development, and you kind of the behind the scenes types of things of what I'm most interested in now, and kind of what I look for in the stories behind everything is kind of what keeps my attention these days.
Got you. And speaking of stories, how have you felt about the Bloodline storyline?
I think it's been one of the best storylines in over a decade, probably. I think that it's probably surpassed the circle of friendship with Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho from a few years ago. And but it's just been, this is how storytelling and wrestling is supposed to be done. And so I think that's a huge testament to the wrestlers involved, to the Usos and to Roman Reigns. I think I still don't think he gets the respect that he probably deserves. No, it's been great to watch. It's been great to unfold. And a lot of times, you know, storylines that last this long, you're kind of ready for the payoff and ready for it to end. And this one still kind of has potential to maintain at some point. And so that's what makes it so great.
So are you okay with Cody not getting it done?
No.
No. Thank you.
I tried to be open-minded to that. And I'm like, no, because I feel like, especially now more than ever, like back when I was growing up, when we were growing up, it was like you had time to let these kind of things kind of marinate and kind of come together. And now it's a little bit more microwave in the era that we're in now. And so you got to build off of the momentum that you're in. And so I feel like, I don't know if y'all know LA Knight.
Mm-hmm. Boy, do we. Yeah.
I'm worried that they're going to lose. They're going to miss the boat. They're going to miss the momentum on him that he's got. Like he's the hottest wrestler right now and it's not even close. And I feel like they need to capitalize on that while he's hot. And I hope that when Cody does get his payoff, that he gets the ovation that he deserves. He's probably my favorite wrestler right now, honestly. But I was not a fan of him losing at Mania.
God, I'm not going to go into my whole thing. Steve's going to yell at me. Who's your least favorite wrestler right now?
Right now? I don't know that I have one right now. I think that I'm just like, I don't like the old guys that just stay around. Like, if you're going to stay around to put some younger talent over. So I don't know who would be right now. I can tell you all time it's maybe three all time, actually. I am not anything for Hulk Hogan.
We are with you.
I am. I think Ultimate Warrior is probably the most overrated wrestler of all time.
Okay.
And I've warmed up a little bit to Shawn Michaels, but it'll always be a dull spot in my heart for him, just based upon the what happened in Montreal Survivor Series.
No smile for Shawn Michaels. Okay.
Yeah, no. miss me with Hulk Hogan in the leg drop. Miss me with Ultimate Warrior in the rope shake. Like,
Dom kills me. Dom just kills me.
He's right up there with LA Knight too on who's hot right now. Like, it's tough.
Dom is on fire. Dirty Dom, put some respect on his name, guys.
I won't actually. Cause like I'm cool with him being like heel or whatever, but like he's so bad is the issue that I have.
Yeah, the thing that, and I don't even I don't even know that he's a bad wrestler, but what I don't like is that he's just not, he's not believable to me that he can beat anybody.
Yeah.
That's what does it for me. But the character is undeniable right now. And the storyline that he's in, and I think a lot has to do with Rhea Ripley, because I think she's amazing. But yeah, it's just not believable to me.
I got a theory. That Austin Theory guy stinks.
He's also not believable. And John Cena told him that he wasn't believable.
And he's a 72 overall. I'm sorry.
I'm with you, Jay. I'm not a big Austin Theory fan either. Do y'all watch AEW or just WWE?
I'm trying to get Nakias on the bandwagon.
Steve is one of like 12 people like, hey, man, it's actually good. And like what I've seen has been solid. So like I don't have any beef with it. But I'm not as... Like, I grew up with WWE, or I guess WWF at that point. But, like, I grew up with that. And then as I got deeper into football and basketball and then it became all about basketball, I just, like, fell off with it. And so now I am back in the process of getting back in with the WWE. Sure. But I have tapped in with some AEW. Like, who are some of your faves there?
I think Jericho will always be there. He's one of the older guys that's still around and still kind of looking out for the young talent. So I like that. I'm a big Adam Cole fan. And... I'm not a big Dean Ambrose fan. MJF is great. That's kind of where it ends for me.
Steve, did you have Dean Ambrose thoughts? Like, we stumbled onto something here.
Get that man a Band-Aid.
You can find several Dean Ambroses on the corner somewhere that'll just be ready to fight. Like, He's just a brawler. Like, he's not, like, come on, man. Then he comes out to his entrance music, his Wild Thing. It's like, Charlie Sheen already did that in Major League. Like, we good.
I'm fine, but every time I watch this, man, he's bleeding. And I'm like, why are you always bleeding?
Or not, exactly.
This is a 5-minute match. Two minutes in, you just...
That's it. Do your little DDT and get on back to the back. Like, we good.
Not do your little DDT. That's tough. Oh, God. I guess this last wrestling question I have for you, just going with SummerSlam, going to be, I think, this Saturday. Should be a lot of fun. What are your expectations? What would you like to see this weekend?
I would like to see LA Knight win the Battle Royal. I think Roman's probably going to get his just due on Jay. I think that Asuka will probably win the women's title. Who am I missing?
Does Finn Balor win the championship?
He's one that I fell off on. I was a huge, huge Finn Balor fan. And then they just had him lose every time on TV. And I was just like, that's how you lose momentum. So no, I'm going to say no to that.
Okay.
Cody and Brock, right?
Yes. Is Cody Rhodes finish a story?
Or is he finished?
If Cody loses this match to Brock, I'm gonna be sick, but he should win this one. He should win against Brock, but because you gotta, if your plan is for him to eventually take the title, you gotta have some momentum built for him too. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to the most.
I guess I just have a question on the Brock Cody fight. Have we got like the official reason why Brock just stomped the man out? Cause like we're going into like part three, and it's just like, okay, what sparked? Like, it's kind of like was it Shayna and Ronda Rousey? It's like, we just got the lore.
We really
like a week ago.
We rarely get any explanation on Brock. We just love seeing Brock come back because he's Brock. Like, there's never really any reason for anything he does. He's just one of those guys that makes it entertaining.
You can just lean on large angry man does mean things.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I thought the bit was going to be he was mad at Cody because he ain't win the championship and he couldn't fight Roman no more. So now I'm going to beat you up. But they never said that. So I just went with it. I was like, all right. Cool.
No, and to be honest, they were never really done. Well, they were never really done with the Cody and Roman storyline. It was just the bloodline just took off in a way that you probably couldn't imagine. And so I think there's still more to tap into there. Yeah, so we'll see.
Well, we're going to need for Cody to handle business. Hey, man, can't keep getting jumped like this. Anyway. Oh, Lord. Just one last round. Steve, do you have any closing thoughts or questions for Tyler?
What do you think of Logan Paul?
You know, I don't really like him outside of wrestling, but in wrestling, I kind of do. And I think that I do because kind of like Bad Bunny, I don't really listen to Bad Bunny's music, but when he's in the ring, I'm going to watch. And I don't usually like those type of crossovers, but I respect anyone that takes it as seriously as they do. And look, they're both actually really, really, really good in the ring. I felt the same about Pat McAfee. He's actually pretty good in the ring too. So, yeah, I think he actually gets the win over Ricochet. So yeah, I don't mind him. I think that he draws a reaction from the crowd and he's good in the ring and he looks like he's sincere about, you know, about being there. It's not just like a part-time thing for him. So, I don't mind him at all.
Gotcha. Is Logan just who Austin's supposed to be?
Nah, that man can hoop. Austin, man.
But that's Austin, what I'm saying, because Austin can't hoop, but like he's supposed to.
Nah, Austin Theory is the 7-footer who's supposed to be able to post up that can't post up.
That's
now what am I going to do with you?
I had names, but I'll leave it there.
No, okay. Don't do it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Also, just a shout out to all the slaps that will be had in the Gunther Drew McIntyre match. Going to be peak violence indeed. Well, beyond that, Tyler, thank you for giving us so much of your time. Any plugs for the blog, your Twitter account, where we can watch the Aces, et cetera?
Twitter at Hoop for Thought, HOOP, the number 4, THOUGHT. Instagram is TR Marsh and the number 12. Email trmarsh12@gmail.com. The blog I'll keep is behoopforthought.com, but I'll keep posted on that, maybe changing direction in that pretty soon. But I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a lot of fun. Welcome to come back anytime. I really appreciate you guys.
I should not have said that on record because now we will absolutely have you back on. So you are now required to answer the call next time we have you on. Sounds good. All right. Thank you for those who listened to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us. You can follow me on Twitter at NikaiasNBA. You can follow Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. Join the Dunker Spot community on Twitter. We're having fun discussions in there or just discussing tweets that we don't want people to hop in on. Have some fun with that. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties with Watch Playback. We are having a ball. We're watching W games. We're watching wrestling, slam ball and tennis and golf. And we've done darts. We've watched lacrosse. We've watched reality television. I will just leave it at reality television. We just watched Celebrity Family Feud on Sunday. Like we bounce around. So the link to the room will be hyperlinked in the podcast description. So just click on that, enter your information. It is free, no shenanigans. If not, just copy and paste the link into your browser. Once again, it is free, no shenanigans. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
I would be so mad if The Rock shows up now.